The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Turning now to the crisis at the border, the Supreme Court has temporarily blocked the Biden administration from ending Title 42. The pandemic-era immigration policy, you'll remember, allows the U.S. government to turn away migrants at the southern border, even if they're applying for asylum based on coronavirus concerns.
The border has spilled over into El Paso, where thousands of migrants seeking asylum are overwhelming shelters.
Have you ever seen it like this?
No.
John Martin runs an El Paso homeless shelter that is mostly filled with migrants. Capacity is 120. But to avoid the freezing temperatures earlier this week, more than 230 people packed the rooms and hallways.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon. It's good to be back here with you today. Thank you so much. Boy, a lot to pray for, huh? What a mess on our southern border. I feel bad for so many of these people. What's Christmas going to be like for them? Maybe a time of great surprise, you know, entering a new country, starting a new life. Very much like a lot of people have done. I take a look at the migrants throughout the Old Testament and even the Holy Family migrating to Egypt at one point in time. Compassion and love has got to be shown, but boy, we need also to govern and protect this country properly. Today, the Supreme Court put a pause ending Title 42. We've been talking about it. I've been telling you it's been coming. Question is, how is the Biden administration going to handle this? And what does it mean to our country? What's it mean to those who live on the southern border? The program, Title 42, was actually set up by our former president, by President Trump. And it's supposed to keep migrants on the other side of the U.S.-Mexico border because of the pandemic. Made sense? Well, a lower court ruled that it can expire tomorrow. But a coalition of Republican led states, they appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Chief Justice, John Roberts, he put an administrative stay on it and requested a response from the Biden administration. He gave it until 5 o'clock Eastern time today to file it. If the program is ended, anyone will be able to cross the border and claim to be seeking asylum, and they can't be sent back. That's why you have so many of these migrants on the other side of the border. They've made their way. They've been camped out for weeks. I mean, you should see how the population is amassing. And they know this is a critical moment as the final grains of sand drain through that hourglass, that if this thing ends, if it expires, they can cross the border, walk across, they'll seek asylum, and they cannot be sent back. So thousands just waiting to see what happens. And you know what that means? It means an inundation along our southern border. We talked about it yesterday a little bit. I take a look at some of these southern towns like El Paso, places along those lines. They're overrun. The shelters, the facilities that have been set up. I saw one facility that should house about 1,000 migrants, refugees, people coming over. They had 4,600 people crammed into them. And then I sit back and I think, you know, I'm so sick of hypocrisy. I don't want to vent today. I really don't. But, you know, they used to point fingers at the previous administration and say, look, you're putting people in cages. I mean, look at how people are being treated now. And I'm not saying anyone's doing it deliberately. I just think it's an overflow of migrants in this country. We had plenty of time to get this right. We had plenty of time. We knew what was going to happen. And we are now in the pinnacle of something even more significant developing. And these individuals are going to have to deal with very inhumane conditions. Anyway, I'll throw that on your radar. As I said to you yesterday, and I'll continue to monitor the story. This is going to be a very big story, and it's going to continue to develop in the days and the weeks ahead. I'll keep you up to speed on it. We really should dive into maybe after the holidays. We should talk about, what does the church teach regarding, you know, the immigration or migration of foreign people? What about our own country's rights? How do we draw the balance? What would Christ say? You know, so we can look at that. I think it's really important to understand that. I always want to look at these issues, and these are not clear-cut, black and white, easy issues. They've got to be looked through the lens of our Catholic faith. And sometimes there are a lot of gray areas, and I know that can be problematic for some people. Anyway, the Supreme Court, went a little bit of good news. How about this? The Supreme Judicial Court, I really should say, of Massachusetts, they did something right. They found that there is no right to medical suicide in the state's constitution. And here's another thing, and maybe I will vent a little bit. What's up with everybody trying to find in the constitution, a right to abortion or a right to euthanasia. I mean, what is up with that? They found there is no right to physician-assisted suicide. Why? Oh, it would violate the prohibition against manslaughter in the state. And here's, let me share one quick sentence from it. It says, although we recognize the paramount importance of the and profound significance of all end-of-life decisions, after careful consideration, we concluded that the Massachusetts Declaration of Rights does not reach so far as to protect physician-assisted suicide. Now, I just want to say thanks be to God, because Massachusetts could be kind of a liberal state. That's a victory. That's a victory. I want to throw props out to everyone who sang the Memorare with us here at Relevant Radio. We've sent over 400 million of those. And I really believe that helped to bring about the fall of Roe v. Wade. Not the only thing, but I do think prayer motivates and accelerates things. I want to give my gratitude to Father Rocky and the Rosary Across America. I want to thank every Divine Mercy prayer warrior with me. I think these prayers, when we pray every day for an end to the culture of death, they're heard. And this is a victory. This is an answered prayer. That's the light, and I think we should look at it. In other news, the FBI, let's talk about that for just a quick second. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and I'm saying, what I'm about to share with you is un-American. You know, this is something you would hear in a communist or a totalitarian type of country. There's been another data dump regarding Twitter, and I don't know how closely you follow this, if you're on Twitter or not. The release of the Twitter files hasn't, you know, if you don't think it's been bad enough, with the FBI prepping Twitter and Facebook to censor, you know, the Hunter Biden story, the New York Post story about that, about his scandal. Well, the latest installment tells us there's even more. The FBI, they actually paid Twitter for what they called legal process response. According to the Daily Wire, this is where I saw this particular story, they apparently referenced the amount of time Twitter executives spent coordinating with the agency. You know how much the taxpayer dollars, how much of your money went to this, how much they gave to Twitter? How $3.4 million taxpayer dollars to censor, to gather data, right? The latest Twitter files are published. Rounds of documents are revealing the FBI's role in suppressing content and paying to Twitter, this private company, by the U.S. government, millions. Check this out.
Michael Schellenberger released more Twitter files yesterday, and these also centered on the site's much, very infamous decision to suppress the New York Post Hunter Biden laptop story. The most interesting disclosure this time around was that the FBI actually paid Twitter $3.4 million to process the agency's requests. So in fact, Twitter's official terms of service have a guidance for law enforcement section, which makes clear that Twitter may seek financial recompense if asked to complete burdensome tasks for the government. So anyone who thinks about this for more than a few seconds can easily understand some perverse incentives at play. The government pesters Twitter about suppressing content it doesn't like. Twitter puts in extra work in order to take care of those requests. And then it bills the FBI, and the FBI pays Twitter, by which I mean you pay Twitter, since all federal government money is actually confiscated from the hardworking taxpayers of this wonderful country. That seems bad, doesn't it?
I love it. Yeah, I think it does. Well, you know, it's your taxpayer dollars at work, huh? Anyway, I'm shocked by this, and I think it should give, you know, you pause. I think it should give all of us pause when we hear stories like this. The Federal Bureau of Investigation should not be doing this. But here's the other thing, and I go back. I've been beating this piñata, right? I've been beating this drum. The mainstream media, and here's my frustration. The reason I talk about this, I'm honestly frustrated by it. And I literally thank God. When I'm in adoration, when I'm in time of prayer, for the gift he's given me of Relevant Radio and this microphone so that I can share with you, I can be with you, and I can at least shine some truth, some light on these issues. My frustration comes again with the mainstream media ignoring this story. They're pretty much ignoring these files. The MRC, we've had them on the air a number of times, Media Research Council. They're saying that the media is ignoring and downplaying the scandal also of Sam Bankman-Fried, the guy from FTX, his initials SBF, right, as he's known, was the CEO of that now failed cryptocurrency exchange. Well, he gave millions of dollars, millions, to political candidates You know, and he played both sides of the aisle. The bulk of his donations went to Democrats, but some went to Republicans. But the fact that MRC says that major networks are completely ignoring this story, I'm telling you, it should give us all pause. I mean, why is that? And how do we remedy it? It's another issue we should really look at. How do we get these powerful propaganda machines? And that's what I call these mainstream outlets, these media outlets. They can attack conservative. They can attack liberal. You know, I just want truth. You know, I wish we had a mainstream network. I shared yesterday on how CNN is now trying to come more mainstream, more middle. I hope they're successful in that. I think their ratings will skyrocket. You know, there's a lot of punditry on. When I was attending the university, my journalism professor said to me, you know, you're called to be a watchdog of the government, right? He hated the happy talk. He hated the punditry. He wanted objective news. He was this old salt, hardcore news guy, right? The world of broadcast news today has radically changed. But it's not that you are just being a pundit. I mean, there's unbelievable bias there. And it's hurting our country. They talk about threats to democracy in this country, right? I think that fourth state, I think the media is a threat to our democracy if it is not fair and balanced and truthful. It's not truthful above all, right? Anyway, I'm going to stop. I said today it's Christmas week. I'm still fired up. We got a lot to get into. We're going to talk movies. We're going to talk a whole lot of other things coming up here as well. But let me give you how about some good news? There's another story I saw. I like this one, right? The Austin Institute, I saw a piece where they did a study of Catholic priests. And they're looking, hey, how are these new priests? Are they liberal? Are they conservative? What's the holiness of this next batch of priests like, right? Because we know vocations are down. We know there's a problem fundamentally. Younger priests, they've discovered, are more conservative in their outlook than older priests. In fact, the Wall Street Journal was reporting that regarding the church's prohibition against sexual immorality and suicide and the impossibility of women's ordination to the priesthood and the necessity for salvation of faith in Jesus Christ, each successive 10-year cohort of priests supports the church's teaching more strongly than the one before. And I think when you're aligned with the church, when you're aligned with its magisterial teaching, when you are faithful and obedient to that, there's going to be a lot of good fruit that comes from it. We wonder about people leaving the church, right? How many of your kids are away from the faith right now? How many of your friends have left the church? They just don't go anymore. I believe in God. It's not that I don't. I just don't need organized religion. Besides, look at those priests. Look at the corruption. I think as we see these priests who are faithful to the church's teaching, who have devotion to the Eucharist and to Our Lady, there's going to be a revival. And thank God for our bishops. They're underway with this Eucharistic revival right now. I am seeing a revival coming to the Catholic Church in America. I don't see it far off. I think Relevant Radio is playing a role in it. I think our nation's bishops are playing a role in it. You are called to play a role in it. These priests are playing a role in it. As evil rises, it can look powerful and daunting, but I'll tell you what, grace abounds all the more. Those are ordained in 2010 or later, the report found, are the most conservative of all. And they're maybe the least happy with Pope Francis, with roughly, you know, unfortunately, some disapprove with him. I don't agree with that. I think we need to be faithful to our Pope. I know you may disagree with that too. I think we need to pray for the Pope. We need to pray for our bishops. Our Lady said that in many of her apparitions. But this is moving in the opposite direction of the laity. So as there was a 2021 survey for America Magazine by the Center for Applied Research in the apostolate at Georgetown University, they found that 52% supported the ordination of women as priests. This is laity, right? 62% of priests should be allowed to bless same-sex marriages. And 38% were somewhat opposed to euthanasia or assisted suicide. I'm thinking, who the heck are they? You're certainly not Catholic if you don't call yourself Catholic if you go down that lane, right? Let's hope that these priests, these holy men who are saying yes to God, are able to reach those wayward Catholics, those disillusioned, misinformed Catholics, blinded by the culture, blinded by the current lies and ideology of our day, and bring them back to the truth. And maybe it's one of your children, so let's pray for them, all right? Hey, a little good news, too, a little bad news. I'll give you that. We're going to talk persecution of Christians. It's this time of year, and I thought this would be a good story to talk about today, especially in light of Christmas, in the Middle East, in the Holy Land. As you get closer, you know, we often think of the nativity story. I just got back from the Holy Land a couple months ago. An eye-opener. Persecution of our brothers and sisters who are suffering the world over is at unprecedented levels. The numbers are greater than any other time, I think, in recorded history. And we as Americans should be praying about this. We should be praying about it. We need to be praying for them because they're the ones, like the Holy Innocents, who are being imprisoned, they're being tortured, they're being killed on behalf of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And as you celebrate your holidays, you enjoy this opportunity to you know, exercise your religious freedom. Think about those who don't. And, you know, there's a couple quick stories here, and Father Benedict Kiely is going to be joining me here right now. Kiely, right? Benedict Kiely. There's a new network of shrines being established dedicated to persecuted Christians. I just learned about this today, believe it or not, so I thought I'd pass it on. The first one was established at St. Michael's Church in Midtown Manhattan, all right? That was in 2018. Two more have been set up, one in Our Lady of the Assumption and St. Gregory Ordinariate Church in London, and one at St. John the Beloved Church in Clinton, Massachusetts. Cardinal Timothy Dolan, he's the cardinal there in New York, he described the shrine as relevant, timely. He says it's a place of quiet reflection for all those who cherish the gift of religious freedom. So I thought we'd tell you what's happening around the world, share some good news with you, with Father Benedict Kiely. It's good to have him with us. He's a Catholic priest in the personal ordinariate of Our Lady of Walsingham, and he's been devoted, he's devoted his priestly ministry really to aid and advocacy for persecuted Christians in the Middle East. And I'd invite you to check him out. His website is Nazarean.org. You can find him at Nazarean, and that's Nazarean.org. Hey, Father, great to have you with me today. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Drew, as always, for having me on and for your constant support for persecuted Christians. You were on fire. I was just listening to your segment earlier on, and boy, everything you were saying about praying for overturning Roe versus Wade and everything else, your rosary warriors and your divine mercy warriors, well, we can apply all of that to persecuted Christians, please. Amen. God.
And we need to do it. Here's the problem, Father, and it's a, you know, it's, again, I talk about being frustrated. It's just out of sight, out of mind. I mean, most, if I went, took a microphone outside of any church in America, there'd be very few people who are aware of the gravity and the scope of how many of our brothers and sisters, our fellow Christians around the world, are suffering persecution for their faith. How do we raise awareness? And ultimately, what can we do to help them?
It's very true, Drew. Well, first and foremost, what you're doing, and I'm greatly appreciative for Relevant Radio and all that you do. You've had me on a number of times, and it's very sad. I mean, if we get very biblical, if you remember back in the Acts of the Apostles, I use this image often, but it's so powerful. St. Peter, the first pope, was imprisoned, and we hear in the Acts of the Apostles, it's a powerful line. We're told the church prayed constantly, constantly. And what happened? The angel of the Lord freed St. Peter from prison. He thought he was having a dream. Yeah. It's such a beautiful story. He thought he was having a dream, and it turned out his angel was freeing him from the oppression. We're just about to celebrate in 5 days or so Christmas. From the very beginning, if we think about it, from the very beginning, from the time that Jesus was a baby, he was persecuted. The church has been persecuted from the beginning. And our brethren, everywhere in the world, I mean, Nigeria, this year, thousands of Christians, men, women, and children, have been massacred for the faith. And as you said in your earlier segment, no word on the mainstream media, no word. Black Lives Matter, we're told. Yes, of course they do. But apparently black Christian lives in Africa do not matter. This is a, I hate to criticize the authorities in the church, but unless our brethren being persecuted, brothers and sisters in the Lord Jesus Christ, we believe that. It's not a nice story. We're brothers, more than blood, right, and sisters. It's brothers and sisters in the spirit. Our brethren are being persecuted to the death. And unless this is a major priority, much more important than global warming, much more important. Unless this is a priority for us in the church, we're doing something very wrong. And the Lord will, I fear, hold us to account. So I would ask your listeners, first and foremost, to pray. Prayer changes things. We believe that. You just said about Roe versus Wade. Prayer changes things. If we were praying continually rosaries, daily Hail Marys, Our Fathers, for our persecuted brethren, I think we would see dramatic changes in this situation. So prayer is always the first priority.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. There are parts of the world right now where Christians are being systematically executed, such that our own Department of State is labeled a genocide. I take a look at Nigeria and other places along those lines. The magnitude of this, put it into perspective for us, if you could. How many hundreds of thousands or millions or hundreds of millions of people are losing their lives?
We are, Pope Francis has said, and he's correct, we are facing the worst persecution since the first three centuries in the life of the church. Yeah. In fact, it's far worse, of course, because there are many more Christians.
That's right.
And one doesn't want to be negative. We're heading towards Christmas, and it's sort of hard to say, well, what's the positive story on persecution? The positive story, of course, is that our brethren are being faithful, and they're being persecuted because they're faithful to the Lord Jesus. Perhaps in the West, we're not being persecuted because we're not very faithful. But no, it's the worst persecution, almost probably worse than the last century, even under Nazism and communism, all over the world, but particularly now exponentially in Africa, which is really, really serious. As I said, not being covered in the mainstream media. Massive ISIS expansion in Africa, ISIS and its affiliates. We hear about ISIS being defeated. It's true the caliphate was defeated, but ISIS in Africa is massively expanding. Nigeria this year alone, 2022, at least 4,000 plus Christians, men, women, and children, have been massacred in churches, in their homes, in their villages, churches being burned down. And unfortunately, even not just in the church, but even politicians, the president of Ireland, you'll love the story, well, you may not love the story, but it's kind of amusing, although very sad. The president of Ireland, when he heard about the massacre of Christians on Pentecost Sunday in Nigeria, wrote a letter of condolence to the bishop of the diocese of Ondo in Nigeria, blaming in part the massacre on climate change. I met this bishop, Bishop Jude of Ondo, and he said, I can tell you, my men, women, and children were not massacred because of climate change. This is what we're dealing with, Drew. So we have to be, I think we've got to be a bit muscular. You know, we've got to be a bit aggressive now. We Christians, we've got to stand up and say, unacceptable that our brethren are being slaughtered.
No, I could not agree with you more. And Father, I'm so grateful for what you're doing. And back to the point, I remember speaking of Nigeria, I mean, Boko Haram had come in, they captured like 300 girls to put them into sexual slavery. And there was a bishop there, I think his name was Dash, if I remember correctly, and he was deep in prayer. And Jesus appeared to him with a sword in his hand, and the sword transformed into, this is what the bishop reports, into rosary beads. And he heard the Lord say to him three times, Boko Haram is gone, Boko Haram is gone, Boko Haram is gone. And the bishop, he said, I didn't need any explanation for that. It was clear that with the rosary, I would be able to expel Boko Haram. And this man started a rosary crusade, and much to the amazement of everybody, Boko Haram, after I think the Wall Street Journal was reporting on this, abandoned hundreds of these kidnapped girls, and they moved from that part of Nigeria that they were in. So prayer, to your point, really does change things. So does financial support. And I want to put a plug in for your organization too before we go. It is Christmas. I know people look for charities. Nazarene.org is your organization. What will people find there, and how can we help you help Christians throughout the world?
Bless you, Drew. Well, we are very simple. We are two things, aid and advocacy. The advocacy is me doing what I'm doing now as a priest. It's my full-time ministry, speaking, writing, preaching, talking, trying to make Catholics especially aware of this persecution. But aid is also very, very simple. We mini microfinance small family businesses at the moment in Iraq and Syria and Lebanon, hopefully in Egypt next year. To keep people, you were also talking a little bit earlier about migration. We try and keep families, Christian families, in their homeland so they don't leave. So they don't leave the Middle East. The whole of the Middle East is the Holy Land. You know, Egypt, Iraq, Lebanon. This is where the Lord and his disciples walked. So we mini microfinance small family businesses to keep them there so they don't just receive handouts. They start a business, they keep their families, they employ other people, they have dignity. But I'd really stress, as we're believers, Drew, at this time of the year, the prayer thing is, you highlighted the shrines for persecuted Christians. This is critical. We are trying to place shrines with the bishop's blessing in diocese so that people can come and pray continually before an icon of Our Lady, of Our Blessed Lady, Mother of the Persecuted Church, to pray strongly, consistently, constantly for our brethren. Because, you know, when I go to these places, to Iraq, to Syria, to Lebanon, the very first thing they ask me, always, please pray for us. Please pray for us. And sometimes they doubt that we're doing it. So I'd really ask your listeners, if you can do nothing else,
amen,
money's great, but please pray for our brethren.
I love it. And if you can't afford to give, then pray for the person who can. That's what I always say. Hey, Father, God bless you. Have a blessed Advent. And I'm sure we probably won't talk beforehand. So have a Merry Christmas as well, okay?
And you, Drew, and bless your listeners. Thank you.
Thank you. I look forward to talking to you soon. We'll continue to stay on this. Have a Merry Christmas.
God bless.
God bless you. Bye-bye. That's Father Benedict Keeley. He's a wonderful Catholic priest who, as I said, dedicated his life to helping persecuted Christians throughout the world. Nazarene.org is the website. Hey, I got to take a short break. When we come back, I just found out something else that surprised me. You know, I mean, if you're looking for a job, ladies, gentlemen, I've got a job for you, right? I've got an area that there is a growing shortage in. It's a noble profession. It's one where you can show mercy on a daily basis. It's an area where you can minister Christ to others, and you'll love it. Very professional environment. What is it? I'll tell you when I return.
Your news. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Your news now.
Hey, the University of Mary, our sponsor, has a Christmas gift for you. But you're going to have to wait for the Three Kings to arrive to hear about the special opportunity. A tuition-free nursing academy with applications closing January 31st.
Get the facts, get the faith. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's good to be with you today. Thank you for joining me. Coming up in about 25 minutes or so, we'll pray the chaplet. You can tell somebody else about it. Maybe somebody who needs prayer or is going through a particularly difficult time. Glad to get together with so many people. It's the highlight of my day, to be honest with you, or at least the show here, when I can pray with you and intercede for you. Hey, coming up, Monsignor James Say is going to be stopping by. And I invited him today for a particular reason. I came across a bit of news that actually shocked me. You know, we've been talking a lot about the pandemic. We've been talking a lot about what's happening in terms of conscience for physicians and transgender surgeries. I mean, we were talking about a whole litany of things. So stumbling through some of that, I came across a story that was, you know, a little bit surprising. The U.S. is facing a nursing shortage. It's due to aging population, retiring nurses, a whole litany of reasons. But if you are looking for a good job, maybe you say, I'd love to go back to school and do that. I'm going to get you plugged into a great program that you can use and very cost effective for you. But I was surprised. The need for nurses, they say, is aligning right now just with this increased demand for healthcare. I was checking out the American Nurses Association. They estimate that there are more than a million new nurses needed. More than a million new nurses needed over the next couple of years to prevent what they're saying is going to be a critical shortage. By the year 2030, seven states are projected to have a shortage of registered nurses. More than half of nurses right now, half of RNs, they're over the age of 50. They're over the age of 50. That to me was just a stunning stat. What are we seeing? Look, the population is aging, right? So the demand for healthcare continues to increase, and is doing so at an unprecedented rate. So the U.S. Census Bureau is reporting that by 2030, the entire baby boom generation, maybe you're in that generation, at 73 million people, by the way, they're going to be 65 years or older. And as you know, as you get older, you need more health services. Even the CDC was saying that 19% of people are people over age 55 have three or more chronic conditions. So it's really quite striking. 52 years or older, most of the RNs are, right? 19% are over the age of 65. So there's going to be a huge, huge deficit. So maybe your daughter, your son is looking for a job. Look, I'm a big guy, probably about 6'3", you know, 235, 40 pounds, something like that. And I think of these girls, if I ever had to go to the hospital, how do you move me, right? How do you get me from one gurney to another, right? How do you do that, right? It's a big guy and a lot of weight. So I think men, some of the best treatment I ever had was from male nurses, believe it or not. But we just came through COVID, right? Stress and burnout amongst nurses is a big issue. And we've seen a lot of people leave that. It was tough. The numbers during COVID were just off the charts, to be honest with you. Joining me today to plug you in on, I think it's just an extraordinary program. And one, if you are interested in maybe exercising those wonderful deeds of mercy and showing acts of kindness and getting paid pretty well too. This is Monsignor James Shea. It's good to have him with us today. He hails from the University of Mary. Check him out at cometomary.com. They've got an excellent nursing program there as well. And I invited him to come by just to give us a perspective on what he knows. Where's the crisis and how do we bridge that gap? And what's our Christian duty as well to serve the sick and the ill? Monsignor, good to have you with me. Blessed Advent.
Blessed Advent to you too, Drew. Hey, you know, the reason we have so much fun together is I think I'm just about as tall as you, and I weigh just about as much as you. And so I think we both share that difficulty of getting me and you from one bed to another.
Well, I think after the Christmas holidays, Monsignor, I'll probably be up another 5 or 10.
Right.
So, you know, you're much thinner than me, and you know, it's tough. You know, it's that weight comes on. It's hard to lose. But I think of these women who've got to move people. A friend of mine was in a hospital. He had to have a heart procedure. And I thought, my gosh, what did they do? I know they have Hoyer lifts and they got these different things that they can move you around with. But we need good nurses. It's such a critical moment in time. You've got an extraordinary program, but you know, I was just checking out some of the Census Bureau data. I mean, fill me in. How big is the crisis? I know it's going to peak. We got the baby boom generation up there. COVID drove some people away. This is an area just ripe for service.
Well, we're in for about 8 to 10 years of kind of a massive nursing shortage, and it's growing. And people don't know that it's coming. It's like a slow flood in the valley that all of a sudden is going to be apparent to everybody. But you're right, your statistics are right. By 2030, we need 1.2 million new nurses in order just to keep things steady. The pandemic had a devastating effect on the healthcare professions. Wow. And of course, the nurses were right on the front lines of everything that needed to happen during that dark time. And so a lot of nurses who already are prone to burnout because they're working hard, they have strange shift schedules, their dedication to their patients is very, very, very great. And of course, to be a nurse, to be with people in the midst of deep suffering and difficulty and devastation in their lives, and to be a part of those healing professions is so very important. And it's so draining from a personal perspective that a lot of nurses, a lot of great nurses, kind of threw in the towel in the midst of the pandemic. And so we had a lot of early retirements that happened as a result of the pandemic. But then you said it right, the baby boomer generation, which is America's largest generation, is growing older, in need of more critical medical care. And so all of us in the world of education are scratching our heads and saying, what can we do in order to meet this really critical need? And of course, as a Catholic university, Drew, we've been about the arts of healing longer than anybody else. In other words, Christians built the first hospitals. We were the ones who cared for the sick. Look at this country alone. When you consider what women religious in the United States of America did in order to build healthcare in this country, caring for both Catholics and non-Catholics by the millions and hundreds of millions in our hospitals and clinics from sea to shining sea. We have an amazing legacy of healthcare as Catholics, as a church in this country. But those hospitals cannot operate. They cannot care for patients unless they have nurses. And the nursing shortage is very acute in our country right now. It's something that we need to wake up to and do something about.
Well, my guest today, Monsignor James Shea. If you want to join us, I'll open the phones. Maybe you're in the nursing profession. You want to share your thoughts. Perhaps you're considering getting in. You got a question as well. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I saw a stat that said that 87% of nurses said they felt burnout in the past year. And, you know, they're a pretty taxing situation with COVID, of course. Let me grab a call or two for you. Tony's in Milwaukee, Monsignor. He's got a comment. Tony, hi, you're on the air with Monsignor Shea.
Hey, Monsignor. I just wanted to make a statement in regards to healthcare being woke, and it's been that way for at least 10 years. Mm-hmm. That might be part of the issue, and I don't see it getting any better.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, Tony, I don't know if you saw the news just this past week. The University of Mary was in a 6-year lawsuit against the Department of Health and Human Services because we were being forced by the government to include transgender or gender transition surgeries, termination of pregnancy is the way they put it, which is abortion, and sterilizations in our self-funded health plan at the University of Mary. And we said that we wouldn't do it. And so we went to court. They were also wanting us to refer for all of these different procedures out of our student health plan, sterilizations, gender transitions, and abortions. And we said we wouldn't be any part of that. And they said, you have to because you have such large health sciences programs. In other words, we've got 5 different schools. Our largest school by far is our School of Health Sciences. And we were founded to educate nurses way back more than 60 years ago. And so we said, no, that's a legacy program. We're a Catholic university. We're not going to do it. And it was a long, long battle, but we won at the district level, and we won at the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals as well, just last Friday. So that was a tremendous victory. And so I think that that some of those elements, which are not scientific, actually, which are ideological, do work their way into sort of the fabric of healthcare. But Tony, that's just a reason that we need to educate our own healthcare leaders in great Catholic universities like the University of Mary. In other words, I can tell you, I'll vouch for our students at the University of Mary. We know about the bioethical principles that we're teaching them. We know about the dignity of the human person. And we've named our whole School of Health Sciences after St. Johanna Beretta Mola, who gave her life for her unborn child. Mm-hmm. And so we really, really take that very seriously. And so we can shake our fist into the night, or we can do something about it. And the University of Mary has decided we're going to do something about it. We're going to educate the next generation of solid Catholic nursing leaders.
I love it. And Father Monsignor, I got to take a quick break here. So when we come back, we can do that. But your website, if anyone wants to get connected to your program, what's the best way to do that?
Well, you can go to umary.edu, but I want to talk to you after the break about umary.edu/nursing academy, because we've just announced a tuition-free nursing academy.
I just read a promo just right before walking into the studio here. I was curious about it. I was going to ask you about that. We come back. We'll talk about that. We'll take your calls, too. If you're on hold, stay with me. We'll take your comment, your question, right after this.
We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Pray, hope, and don't worry. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
Yeah, we're about just 10 minutes away from that powerful prayer. Looking forward to praying it with you. If you're just joining me, I stumbled across a stat that just kind of surprised me, and I like surprises. This is not necessarily a good one, though. Found out there's a nursing shortage, and it's a pretty significant one. at that. The U.S. is facing a crisis by the year 2030. And look, we're right around the corner from that. There's going to be over a million nurses needed. And look, we're seeing, I was reading about the pandemic, in fact, during the COVID-19 pandemic. That hurt. You know, the height of the pandemic, the nurse-to-patient ratio skyrocketed. It went to 1 to 14. 14 patients to one nurse. And I just want to thank those of you in the medical profession for your sacrifice, for just, you know, going into the trenches there during COVID. It was unknown. Not a whole lot of people knew what was going on. A lot of these nursing units were inadequately staffed, and you did double duty and took on a lot of people. We need you. We're grateful for you. And if you feel called to this profession, I should say, my guest today, Monsignor James Shea, comes from the University of Mary. And I'll give you a website. They got something that has never been done before. I thought I'd put it on your radar. Go to umary.edu/nursingacademy. You'll get all the details. But Monsignor, before we jump into the phone calls, you expand on this a little bit. Fill everyone in on what's so unique about this and how extraordinary this opportunity is.
Yeah, thanks, Drew. So right before the break, I told you that we've been doing nursing at the University of Mary since we were founded in 1959, more than 60 years ago. So nursing is one of our legacy programs. And the University of Mary's nursing program, and I think relevant radio listeners know this, but the University of Mary's nursing program was rated number one in the nation of more than 2,000 programs, number one in the nation two of the last 3 years. And so we have an unbelievably good nursing school, an unbelievably good nursing program, and our students pass their boards 100% year after year. So we've got a great nursing academy, or a nursing program, but we're launching a new nursing academy, which is a track within our traditional nursing program. So we've got all kinds of nursing programs. We've got an RN to BSN program. We've got our traditional four-year Bachelor of Nursing Science BSN program. We've even got an accelerated program where if you have a degree in anything else except for nursing, if you just want to get a nursing degree and you've already got a bachelor's degree, maybe that economics degree, maybe that English literature degree isn't working out for you, you can come back and in about 1 year and 13 months, you can complete your nursing degree. So we've got all those different programs. We're adding a new track, which is called the Nursing Academy. And the Nursing Academy is going to be launched in the fall of 2023 for first-time, full-time freshmen.
Wow.
And it's tuition-free. We've partnered with two massive healthcare systems, which have hospitals right here in Bismarck, and we've decided that we're going to use their support to offer our nursing academy at no cost at all. So it'll be on the year-round campus model, which you and I have talked about before, Drew. So you can come to the University of Mary, you can get your nursing degree in less than 3 years, tuition-free. Included with that, we have some donors who have put together an all-expense-paid pilgrimage to Europe as part of this program. In other words, students are going to go over, they're going to stay at the University of Mary's Rome campus, they're going to go and visit the home of St. Gianna Beretta Mola in Mesero in northern Italy. We're going to take them to Dachau and to Nuremberg, to the death camp of the Nazis, so that they can taste and smell the culture of death. Then we're going to take them to Lourdes, and we're going to spend a week at Lourdes with them, and they're going to be able to help the sick. They'll meet the sick at the train station. They'll help them in the hospital. They'll put them into the baths. They'll push them in the Eucharistic processions and the candlelight processions. And so it's a really, really big deal. We're going to have a tuition-free nursing academy at the University of Mary. You'll complete your degree in less than 3 years on our year-round campus model. You'll be able to tour Europe. We'll allow these students who gain admission to get admission to the nursing program as a freshman. Usually you have to win a spot after your freshman and sophomore year. We'll let you into our nursing program right away as a freshman. And then, of course, we have these great big health systems, CHI, St. Alexius Health, and Sanford Health, which are helping us to underwrite it. And they'll be right there to provide amazing employment opportunities at the end. So that's one of the things that we're doing to to try and a job to try and address this nursing shortage?
It always seems surreal. My producer Maggie's putting in her 2-week notice right now, she said. So I'm kidding. I wouldn't let her go. She's actually chained to the board over there. She can't leave me. I mean, you talk about a Christmas present for yourself. That sounds unbelievable, right?
Well, that's how severe the nursing shortage is. When I went to these hospitals and I said, hey, we can help you with your nursing shortage. It's a workforce crisis in nursing. But in order to do that, you're going to have to put your money where your mouth is. You need to help us to launch something really amazing for young men and women who want to go into nursing, because we've got to get them educated. And I want to do it in a really, truly Catholic way. I want to give them sort of the deep bioethical formation and training such that they're able not just to have sort of professional excellence, but so that they're able really, really to live as Catholic nurses. And so it's very exciting.
Yeah, I think the bioethical angle is so critical in healthcare. I think it's an area that it's there's a gap in right now. And in fact, you're going to DACO. I've often said on the air here many times, I think every human being, every citizen of this planet, if it's possible, should walk through the concentration camps of, you know, Treblinka or Auschwitz or Dachau or these places to see man's inhumanity to man, or go to Rwanda and see the outcome of the genocide there. I mean, it's eye-opening. And I am so grateful that you're giving not just the healing side of Lourdes and the beauty of the ministry, but you're showing them the reality of what happens when ethics is no longer at play. But Monsignor, let's go to a few phone calls here for you too. Mary's in San Diego. She's got a comment for you. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Drew and Monsignor. Thank you for taking my call. I live in San Diego, and I'm currently in licensed vocational years for the last 25 years. My daughter applied to every nursing school here in Southern California, and she had to go out of state because it is so competitive to get into a program. She is now a nurse, a registered nurse, and to get these employers make it so difficult to hire new grads. So that's a big problem here in Southern California. They make it impossible for them to get jobs in these huge healthcare systems.
There you go, Monsignor.
Yeah, so Mary, we're seeing that all the time. You know, we have a lot of students from San Diego, right from your area, here in North Dakota, studying nursing and studying other things as well. And it's an interesting thing because, of course, in San Diego, you've got the best weather in the world, and we spent last week in a blizzard. But the shortage of placement for getting into nursing school in a place like California or even Arizona. We get lots from Arizona. We get lots from California because there's just a capacity problem in terms of higher education. And so we're trying to open up our program to take more and more students because we know that we need to address this nursing shortage. But we love, Mary, I'll tell you, we love students who come here from San Diego, and they do get used to the winters. It takes a little bit, but we toughen them up.
Well, thank you very much, Mary, for your call. I appreciate it. Chicago's next. Monsignor Jennifer's listening. Good afternoon, Jennifer.
Oh, yes. I wanted to know if you had the fast track program. And I think you've already said it. If you've got a bachelor's and you want to pursue nursing, there's many here in Chicago area that you can get an MSN, even though your bachelor's is not in any of the hard sciences. But my question is, do you take any return on adult students? A bit up there in age, but really kind of a medically literate person because I spend half my life in hospitals with unhealthy family members.
Wow. All right. Great question.
Jennifer, you sound young at heart for sure. Of course, we do have that accelerated nursing program, but we also have MSN programs and a DNP program. So we have a doctorate in nursing as well. And so, yes, we have a whole array of programs. I think there you would go to catholicprofessional.life. And you'd be able to go through all of our programs, which are sort of geared for the working adult, which includes wonderful healthcare programs in nursing and other healthcare fields. We'd love to have you as a student, Jennifer. You sound wise and young.
Yeah, I don't think I have time. A lot of phone calls. Jim, who is in Volant, Pennsylvania, was saying my daughter graduated from Franciscan and is an ER, and it's been very difficult in a secular hospital. So, you know, Monsignor, I'm so grateful for what you're doing. That's an interesting comment, too, because we need to bring the teachings of our faith, that morality, those ethics, into the workplace and transform it. Best place, again, it's umary.edu/nursingacademy. Is that the best place?
That's right. For this new program, umary.edu/nursingacademy.
Thank you. Hey, we got to revisit this issue again. Let's do it again, maybe on the other side of the year, okay? Monsignor, thank you. Have a blessed Christmas.